Welcome, ASP listeners, to the Adventure Sling Podcast. This is the podcast where we speak adventure. I'm joined today by Aaron. Hello.
Hello.
Nice hot summer day today. And speaking of hot stuff, we had a great conversation with this month's podcast guests, Kat and Kristen from Rainbows and Razor Blades.
Absolutely. We did. It was nice talking to another kind of duo who are engaged in similar stuff as we are and kind of getting some other perspective on what it's like to work as a team.
Right. Yeah, because teamwork is, you know, something that we got into organically and without, I don't know, for my part, without taking huge measure in what that meant. It just sort of developed for us. And then in this process, which is now over a year on, we learned more. And I think you're right. That was reflected in some of the things that they shared with us as well. What comes to mind?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that comes to mind is sort of like when it comes at least to like a duo ship, like we both have, there's sort of like, you know, determining where your different strengths and weaknesses are between each other. There's navigating that ability to have disagreements and to have, you know, finding the middle ground when you're trying to work out a rule or trying to work out, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. It's definitely its own process, mm-hmm. I would say. And it's been interesting kind of mulling that around.
Right. And one of the things we recognize and we talk about is the importance of having the right partner in that partnership. Mm-hmm. Because from my perspective, again, it's impossible to do this alone, but it would be perhaps even harder to try to do it with the wrong other person.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, especially because I think when we're designing a tabletop game, you know, a lot of this stuff is so personal in a way, you know, these ideas really come from an inner place. And when we share them with somebody else who has that similar eye, you know, comes under that scrutiny. And so we have to be willing to be vulnerable to some degree. We have to be willing to, you know, create that space for each other. And if you're with the wrong partner on it, then that job more impossible.
Right. Yeah. No, it will. And it naturally would, because for me, when we're working together, I know I can rely on you to take a concept that I present and say, in the rules, it doesn't line up because of X and Y. So if we want to bring the concept in, it has to match up according to other precedents that are established, and terminology and things like that. And that is something that helps me, because I'm not catching that necessarily. So.
Yeah. And for me, you know, I mean, while putting those kinds of pieces together is usually my forte, I do find that I miss a lot of those kind of grammatical details or sort of like, what am I trying to say within that structure and getting that put together, which can be kind of hard sometimes. Mm-hmm.
And of course, I edit and wordsmith all the time, so that's where maybe I can help. Yeah. Great. Well, let's talk to Kat and Kristen and see what they have to say about putting together this rapidly rising Rainbows and Razor Blades production and their comments on teamwork from their perspective.
Absolutely. Let's get into it.
Kat and Kristen, we are super glad to have you here. Welcome to the channel.
Happy to be here.
Awesome. You are here representing R&R Productions. Is that correct? Uh-huh. Okay, perfect. Before we get into that, we always like to start off talking about gaming histories. It's not an uncommon thing to do. It's a nice icebreaker, and it's always interesting because as an old-time OG gamer myself, I like personally to hear these histories against my own background and just imagine I don't know what that looks like in the development of each individual player. So let's go ahead and start with, if you wouldn't mind, Kat, maybe we can start with you. You can tell us a little bit about your gaming history and when you got into tabletop games. And Kristen, feel free to jump in and follow up whenever you're ready.
All right. So I started playing tabletop games. The first time I played that I can recall was in 95 or 96. A friend of mine had done a homebrew that was based on D&D. And having talked about this a couple of times in other places, I realized it was a homebrew with a little bit like Star Wars mixed in, because we were more in the future on spaceships. And we played that for like 2 months, maybe three. And it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. It was my first introduction to the whole thing. I don't quite remember making my character. I think it was a pre-gen given to me. But I loved it, and it was great. And then I didn't have an opportunity to play until several years later. I had a friend who is basically a career alcoholic, so he was my drunk DM, and he introduced me to Vampire the Masquerade. So I played that off and on for a few years, and then my ex came along, and he's like an extensive role player. He has a role-playing shelf that's just about as tall as I am, and I'm 5'5", and it's about 4.5 feet wide, and it's so stuffed you can't put anything else in it, so full of role-playing books. And we played, and then a couple of different games, and I'd read through some of his books and things. And I've kept doing it off and on over the years, but it has been very sporadic until we started this channel where now I'm involved in it daily, basically. So it's been an interesting transition. So we always call our show, Chaos Commentary, a perspective of a casual player, which is me, because I'm a very casual player over the years, and Kristen, who's the more experienced player. So she's got more of a history than I do, I think.
Gotcha.
Nice. What is that history, Kristen?
As for me, the very first game I ever played was all of about a half an hour of Mage in high school when my cousin was like, hey, let's play this. And then my dad and stepmom walked in, and they're like, oh, no, this is of the devil. We can't do this.
Classic.
So that ended that. And then in college, I had a group of friends that were big into D&D. And we had a casual game going. I want to say we maybe played 6 or 7 games before that fell apart thanks to drama. And then it was a similar story of off and on throughout the years. There was some D&D, some Immortal. Scion was probably one of the most fun games I've played. I adore that. And then about 5 years ago, one of my friends was like, hey, let's start up a D&D campaign. And for about 2 years, it was about 4 different campaigns that we did because he kept getting bored with where the story was going and we all wanted new characters.
The dip.
Nice.
But during that is when I started to get interested in DMing. And so I made one homebrew world that we ran a couple games in, and then I just wasn't happy with it and things fell apart. So that's when I actually came up with Artenna, which we currently run on the channel. And we ran some in there, and then life happened and COVID happened, and it slowly fell apart. And then back in November, I was invited to play with Kayla, Time Lord's wife, on her channel. And from then on, I'm pretty sure like there was like a couple weeks, maybe a month, where I was only in the one game a week. And then by January, I was in at least 5 games a week and was playing up to 7 games a week. And now it's just kind of my life.
Almost every day?
Yeah, except for Sunday right now. I have something related to gaming going on.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just about every day on other channels until we started this, actually. And then slowly it's transitioned to being our channel for the most part.
Yep. Okay.
So, Kristen, you played a number of systems. I want to jump back to Kat real quick. Was the Star Wars one that you played a D20?
You know, I was 17 at the time, and to be quite honest, smoked a lot of pot back then. So I think it was, but my clarity on it isn't quite all there on it. But I believe it was D&D based, so probably. Okay. But he, I don't think he ever did anything with it after a couple of different games he ran in it. I've not heard anything of it since then. But it was fun. We had a good time. I remember just the silly shit that we did. And it was really like, you know, we were just literally just having a good time. Like, we didn't roll a lot of dice. It was a lot more RPing of us just being ridiculous. So
nice.
I think that's why I like that kind of thing more now, because that was my start and I really loved it. I like rolling the dice too, but I really like the RP part myself.
So are either of you board gamers as well? You know, the crunchy complex board games, or is it pretty strictly RPGs?
For me, it's always been strictly RPGs. I've never really had the opportunity to play any crunchy board games. Like my ex, because he was so into tabletop gaming and so like deeply into it, I asked him if he wanted to try them sometimes, and he didn't care for them, so we didn't try them then. And I don't really recall knowing anybody that's really played them, so I haven't had the opportunity personally. I wouldn't mind trying, but I just haven't.
Gotcha.
I've attempted a couple of them, and they probably aren't even considered crunchy ones. It's been like Catan and stuff like that, and it doesn't grip me as well, because I'm a very story-based person. Like, even when I play video games, it's almost exclusively RPGs.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. There are some games some board games that do meet that middle ground, but yeah, you'll never really get the same RP experience with a board game.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely not. There's not as much story there, I feel like, just as a hot take from something I don't know much about.
I'm absolutely one of those people. I'm constantly reading, even if it's rereading, watching stuff or plotting for games or playing games of some kind. Like, I almost always need something that has to do with story going on in my head, or I'm going crazy.
Well, let's talk about that then a little bit. What are some of your gaming related influences, or those outside influences that then directed you toward this kind of experience?
I play a whole lot of Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy is my happy spot. So there's definitely like some minor influences from that, definitely. Most of the influences that shape at least me as a DM or GM have been books that I've read. In Artenna, there's at least five of my series that I reread constantly, because Kat makes fun of me. She's like, there's new books out there. And I'm all like, but this is my happy place, even if I've read it many times.
Well, I'm by and large a one and done reader. Like, every once in a while, I was explaining this the other day too, that if I want to reference something or just kind of like refresh my memory on something, I'll open an old book and I'll read that section and maybe like a couple chapters after. But for the most part, if I finish it, I'm done with it. I need to start a new thing. So I give her a whole hard time about it, but I mean, it makes her happy. So it's, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's entertaining.
But there's a couple of the, there's actually a fairly big chunk of what I came up with for where the story is going with, for Artenna. They're starting to find symbols and clues about it. Actually was born of a compilation of four different book series that I like to read. And like, it brings in a little bit of chaos. It brings in a little bit of religious structure. It brings in, you know, all these different things. So definitely all of the stories that I've fallen in love with over the years influence a lot. Cyberpunk is a little less influenced by stuff, because I usually read urban fantasy or straight fantasy. I'm not usually a sci-fi reader, but there's probably absolutely a lot of Final Fantasy bullshit.
So what are these series? What are the book series, or a couple of these?
One of the main series is the Chronicles of Elantra. It's got like, it has dragons, it has like some familiar kind of races, But they've got, like, the other immortal race are called the Barani, and they're, like, these haughty, almost elf-like beings, but just slightly off enough to be interesting compared to what you know. They've got an entire race that has, like, these stalks on their head where they can pull your memories from your mind. It's a really cool one. A lot of what I read is by Carrie Arthur. She's an Australian author who puts out like 3 books a year.
Wow.
So I'm currently rereading a trilogy of hers that is modern day kind of King Arthur, but they were witch kings instead of that exact story. That's a lot of fun. The chaos thing that I'm pulling from mainly is from Chronicles of Elantra. They have the language of the ancients. And so I'm doing kind of like that with the runes, where each of the runes they find has only one meaning. There's no way to misinterpret it. And they need these to get to where they're going with the story.
Okay. It's fascinating just to listen to you talk about that, because you're telling us a story right now.
Then there's a bunch of others pulled in. Jacqueline Carey is a big influence. And just, you know, like it's a mix of urban fantasy and high fantasy with just interesting twists on how they tell stories.
Gotcha. Okay, so you have your favorites and your series, and you go back to the well a lot, it sounds like. And Kat, you're one and done. You see something, you're like, oh, that was cool, what's the next thing? So now, are you a DM and GM?
I DM'd one whole game, and my first one I actually did live on stream because I figured go big or go home for my first time. I did that at the end of May. I DM'd a Viking Death Squad game, which was actually a whole lot of fun. I am a one and done person. So that's not to say I'm one and done with DMing. I actually backed the Blade Runner Kickstarter, so I have that coming and I want to run that myself. So, but other than DMing, I've historically been a player, so that's part of why I wanted to do it. So I'd never done it before, so it looked cool.
Gotcha.
I wanted to see how it was on the other side of things.
Makes sense. I feel like that's like the natural progression. Usually, there are some people, like in Dad's case, who do start out GMing, and then just live with that forever. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because you have to. But I still get intimidated by GMing sometimes. It's a whole other thing compared to playing, for sure.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I mean, I started playing in the mid 80s, and I still get anxiety before the game session. And I hear that actually a lot. Kristen, is that your experience?
It depends. Like, occasionally, I have weird anxiety where sometimes it will just hit me really bad and I'm like close to a panic attack before we go live, and then we go live and I'm fine. And then other times I'm like, it's whatever, you know, if it fails, it fails. Let's go.
Right.
I love that.
Where does your anxiety come from, Erin?
That's a good question. And I'm sure has a very long, deep answer.
How do you feel about that?
How do I feel? Yeah. No, I just, I don't know. I'm always stressed. I think that I'm not going to have the thing when I need it. And I don't like having to go through my materials too much, which I know is like a necessary part. But, and honestly, that got worse when I started to learn tarot reading, because then I was like, I can never go into the book. I have to be able to just read it off the top. And so I put that same kind of pressure on myself when I GM, I think. But usually, and once the game starts rolling, it's fine.
Yeah, both of us are tarot readers as well. So absolutely, I mean, I still absolutely go to the book first, and then read what it has to say. Yeah. And then I'm like, all right, this is how I interpret what the book says.
Right, yeah, totally. I get that.
Unless it's like a card I've seen like so many times, it's not even funny. And I pull that, I'm like, oh, well, this is a thing now. This is what we're going to do with this.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, you have some that you see more frequently than others that you get to know. But
oh yeah,
my anxiety with any of this stuff is a little backwards from everybody else's. Like, I don't get it beforehand. I get it after. Like, So like when I did DM the game, I was pretty calm. I literally wrote it out like a script, like giving spaces for the players to react or do whatever, and then just kind of wrote the parts of how I wanted to roll it along. But afterwards, I was like sitting here, I was like, I kind of like, and I know this used to be me when I would perform, like I was in choir and orchestra in school. It was the same exact thing, calm as can be beforehand. But afterwards, I'm like a shaking, like freaking out mess. So afterwards, I was like, was it okay? Did everybody have a good time? Oh my God. Yeah. So I do it in reverse. I do it completely backwards. So it's a little weird.
It's interesting. I think it's just sort of indicative of maybe how you handle the emergency situation. Maybe.
Oh yeah. My job. Yeah. It's just a lot of times it's how it goes, or sometimes you don't really have time to have that bout of anxiety. You just kind of have to put it away and go to the next fire. But you know, that is, you know, working in my daytime job is, you know, you hear the alarm bells go off, or you get a call that something's going sideways, or you hear a trauma call and you're like, well, this is the thing we're doing right now. And then whatever you walk into, whatever dumpster fire that is, you're just like, well, here I go with my part, and you just do the thing. So it's probably that way. It's probably why I do so well in that field in terms of just being able to handle it, because I've always been like that. So it just makes for an interesting, like, back end response when everything is done. So
I think it's a good thing to discuss, though, regardless of when it happens, because for our listeners in particular, I believe that the anxiety is a normal response to mm-hmm. what we do. And it's because we are put in a position where we don't have the answers up front from the start. And I think for my part, when I think about it going in and try running your own system that you're supposed to know, you know,
we're forward and backward. We're going to experience that before too much longer. Part of the reason we did want to DM something is we did the drive-through RPG Pocket Quest uh-huh. to do our first rules light TTRPG mm-hmm. as something that gave us a deadline.
Nice.
It's almost done, actually. We have to turn it in on Monday. So it's a...
Tell us more down, about that here. Yeah.
That it's down to just, it's basically writing. Like, I have everything that I was working on. She has everything that she was working on. So now it's just, I do all the graphics and layout and everything, and just the proofreading and editing and stuff. It's basically what we're down to. I don't think we have hardly anything left in terms of actual writing. And we came up with new mechanics and everything.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah.
We know how that is.
Well, Noah Barden was some of the most fun I ever had, and I was so sad when it didn't get funded on Kickstarter.
Oh, well, that was the first swing, but we are actually, right. Honestly, it's a better game now than it was mm-hmm. at that point
nice.
by quite a bit. And
I just hopefully... love the Lenai, and I want to be a little chaotic elemental
forever. A Lenai forever. We made it for you. We just didn't know it at the time.
Right.
Yeah, she told me about it, and it sounds really cool. But so it'd be nice to see it sometime. Hopefully, you get it going, so we can all play it and whatnot. So
yeah, we're on track, and just as not to take away too much from what we're talking about here, but we have just been nonstop working on it the whole time since the first Kickstarter ended. And we're twice as excited, I think, as we were the first time. But the first time, the excitement came from insane, again, that anxiety and uncertainty. And now we're going into it more like, no, we got this.
But, well, yeah, the first crack at a lot of things is that blend of anxiety and excitement where you're not really sure which is which. And it's just all adrenaline. And then the like crash.
Now sometimes I do have visible front end anxiety that comes out as I'm just a crabby bitch and don't talk to me. And I was kind of like that when we were first streaming, because the first like episode that I was running, Kristen came in to talk to myself and was like, go away, essentially. And I know when we finished the game and we put it up on DriveThru for the Pocket Quest, and we're then technically published writers, the first time we like do a play test of it, I might want to throw up. I'm not going to lie. I may actually have some of that front end anxiety because it's, you know, that is putting a big part of us out there. That's a little bit different than what we've put out before. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out when we finally do it.
That's a fantastic segue into R&R and what you're all about. Why don't you start from the beginning on that and just tell us what is what we're calling R&R, or Rainbows and Razor Blades?
Yes, we are Rainbows and Razor Blades Productions. And it started as I was playing on a lot of other channels and I was enjoying it, but I was also like, you know, most of this is mini campaigns. It's really hard to get into a long-term campaign right now. And that's what I really wanted to do, was a bunch of long-term campaigns. And I was like, oh, you know, having a community channel where we had, you know, eventually got to the point where we had other DMs and stuff would be really cool. And in my mind, this was going to be like a 5-year plan to get to anything of what I wanted. And I started setting things up. I got the logo. I, you know, did a whole bunch of that kind of stuff. And then I made my first graphic, and Kat and I had been playing a game of let's not impose on the other.
So I, before I was in healthcare, was a graphic designer, among other IT related things, building computers. I can do it end to end basically on a computer. And but I did extensively graphic design. So I happened to catch her first promo for Immortal. And I looked at it and I was like, oh dear God. I'm like, and you know, and I will say this everywhere that I go, I know she did the best she could with what she had available to her and the skill set that she has. Like, I completely understand, but I looked at it as a graphic designer. I'm like, oh no, I cannot, as your best friend in good conscience, let you go out like this. So I was like, I kept thinking about it in my head. I'm like, how am I going to say it and not sound like a bitch? Because I have like sky high standards for graphics in terms of how I want them to look and everything. And
well, I was thinking in my head, she's so busy, she's got work, because at the time she was doing a contract, she had her kids, you know, I was like, I don't want to impose on her time.
Yeah. I am extraordinarily busy, you know, even like, you know, even now that I haven't been working for the last couple of months, I'm still filling my time with stuff. So we were hanging out one night and we're both drinking, and I looked at her, I'm like, I saw your graphic. Do you want my help? Because I can really help you, because you need some help. This is you need help. Like, I was trying to
say, I didn't want to impose. And then I did the first overlay for Immortal, because this was literally, we had this conversation like, I think it was less than a week before we did the first live show.
It was the weekend before. You did it Monday, and that was like the Saturday or the Friday. It was literally days. And like, and I told her, I was like, I didn't want to impose because this is your thing and you're really excited about it. And I think it's cool too, and I'd love to help and be part of it, you know, but I didn't want you to think that I was trying to like ride in on your fun time when you're so we kind of danced around it and didn't want to, like, she didn't want to impose on my time. I didn't want to impose on her thing. And so finally she's like, yes. So then we decided to become partners in this. And so she made her first overlay, and again, she did her best. And, you know, honestly, I had from that point a week to learn OBS Studio, how to use Zoom with it. And because I used to exclusively use Adobe Photoshop for graphics, and it just does not do what I need for this type of platform. I had to learn Adobe Illustrator too. So I had a whole week to do it. So, you know, even my first overlays weren't great, but, you know, you could see, like, as time went on, they got better too. But yeah, it was kind of just a hilarious dance for like a couple of weeks before she actually like started. It was pretty hilarious, honestly. It's actually classic us. This is how we do things sometimes.
Amazing.
And then she's like, all right, I'm going to be the producer. I'll be behind the scenes. And then I was like, well, my first game is Immortal. And she's like, I want to play.
I was like, I love Immortal. Maybe I can just be a guest. Well, the guest turned into me being there for the entire run after the first episode. Because then it ended on a cliffhanger. I'm like, well, I have to come back next week because I need to know what happens. And that turned into the whole thing. And then I like tacked on for some of our one shots, and then I decided to be in the play tests that we did, and I wanted to DM, and suddenly I'm on every Friday and every other week just at a base. So, and
yeah, so, you know, it started happening. Like, I was like, I have this dream, and we've only been a channel for not quite 6 months, I think, because it was the end of February that we launched the very first episode.
We're at 5 months right now, actually. So,
5 months.
Yeah, five.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Five years worth of content.
Yeah, it's 5 months, and we've gone from a couple of one-shots and a mini-campaign to 5 nights a week of programming.
More long-term games with 2 additional DMs.
17 cast members total, including us. There are 17 people. Oh, no, not counting us. There are 17 people that play or DM on our channel. And 7 total.
We've got an artist that came on. She's one of our DMs, but she's did art for both Artena and then the game she's going to DM. And then she's all like, all right, I know you said that you would pay me for this, but I'm just going to go ahead and get started. So the next thing she's going to do is the Thursday night campaign that our friend Chad runs. And so we're going to have character art in less than 6 months for most of our games.
Yeah, it's really snowballed. Like, even in the first 5 months, we hit 100 viewers already, or followers on Twitch already. And it's like, that's pretty crazy, too. Like, having worked in the internet, you know, from the early days on, and still just being around the internet, of course, obviously all these years, you know, building a following takes time, and usually an exponential amount of time to really get going. So it was kind of crazy to hit that 100 mark, like 2 weeks ago, I think we hit it.
Yeah,
and then to see that, and it's like, whoa, that came quicker than I thought. So
yeah, that's impressive.
So it's
congratulations on that too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. It's been an amazing ride for both of us so far. We both kind of just stop sometimes. We're like, wow, this is a thing we're doing now. It's pretty cool.
Well, a side benefit that we didn't even foresee happening, because, you know, most people, they're friends and they get into a business partnership and then they end up getting into arguments and it drives each other apart. It's become therapy for us. We actually communicate and talk more now because we're like, all right, we've got to work together. So I didn't actually mean this. I meant this. It came out wrong. So let's talk about it.
That's relatable.
It's become therapy in terms of each other, and I think it's strengthened our friendship, but it's also we're learning how to do these things, and it's going to improve our other relationships across the board because of all the things we're learning, because we have these moments where we're snitty with each other, or we're just like, no, I mean this, and get really emphatic. You know, that's especially me.
I'm really over things that we think are happening that aren't.
I mean, I'll admit, I'm the more hard-ass of the two of us, so there are times when I'm just like, no, it is this, you know, and I'm, like, insistent, and then I come back later, and I'm like, man, I was a jerk. But
I get defensive, or, like, my tone just comes out wrong, and then I'm the person that tries to joke to make stuff better, so that I'm trying to make her laugh, and it's just making her more pissed off.
Like, I am not laughing right now. I do not want to laugh.
But then, like, a day later, we'll message each other. We'll be in rooms next to each other and have this discussion over Discord.
it is part, I think, of the process when you're working with someone else that I had to learn to pace myself, because when I started Asp and brought Neovarden from my head, from the dream into the awareness sphere, I'm like going and like sending Aaron stuff all the time. And just learning, like, my pacing is not someone else's pacing. My expectations are not the be all end all of the perspective. That's a big one. Because we have, you know, we get our visions in our heads and then we're like, oh, I got it. This is perfect. Boom. And put it down. And then it's an emotional response that we have to recognize when somebody else says, well, what if it's not quite that? And you're just like, what do you mean? What if it's not quite that?
Yeah, we've been learning that process working on our game too. But we've we've done pretty good because we've been, again, using our you know, impromptu therapy sessions we end up having. So it's made us be able to communicate better, or at least, like, you know, take the criticism or, you know, explain, okay, this is why I did it, and then kind of refine it from there, you know? So it's been interesting, like, this whole time, all these collaborations we're doing together, because we have, like, all of these things we want to do. So just doing them little by little and figuring it all out and how to do it together has been interesting. And it's the same thing. Like, I can be that way too, where I can get very absolute about something. Like, no, it's this, and this is why, and this is why it has to be that way. And then she's like, but no, it could be this, or maybe this, or I don't see it that way because of my experience here, here, and here. And I'm like we were talking about naming skills and things, and I named it proficiencies, and she saw it differently than I did from her experience. She's like, no, when I see proficiencies, I see it like this because of all these games I play, and I think other people would too. And I'm like, but, and I caught myself that time though, as a, you know, I learned. I was like, okay, I don't see it the same way because I have not had those experiences, but okay. And I picked a different name. She gave me a different name she liked, and I went with that. I was like, that's fine.
Yeah.
Yep, that's, totally.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely understand that, especially like, because like I'm the one between us who will get a little spicy, and I've just learned to slow down and sort of mull over the process and let it kind of flow more on its own than force it, I guess.
Force it, yeah. Yeah. I think we learned that after a bit when at various points, each of us was like, well, here's how the rule is. And if somebody can't understand that, then maybe it's not for them, or they're not, you know, they don't have the skill set or whatever. And that's backwards from what you want. When you are creating something for someone else to consume, you want it to be as accessible as possible, regardless of what their experience is,
yes,
their reading level, their comprehension levels, whatever.
Oh, absolutely. That's been my biggest peeve with a lot of things is accessibility. Like, the point of entry for some games is a little too high for some people to tolerate. Like, I have pretty rockin' ADHD and executive dysfunction that comes with it. And there are sometimes when I look at a game and I'm like, nah, my brain just says no. There's just no way. And, you know, if someone sits and breaks it down for me, then I can like get into it and understand a little bit better. But there are some things where if it was just me on my own looking at it, I'm like, no, I'm not going to do this because this is too much, or I'm going to take it apart, you know, and make it something completely different. So then there's no point. So like, and sitting down and writing this first game, because we have a whole bunch of stuff planned around it after, you know, I'm trying to write it in a way that is accessible as possible and simple. So anybody can pick it up and be like, hey, we're going to play this silly summer camp game. Let's go. You know? Yeah. Because accessibility is highly important to me, you know, for that reason. I want everybody to feel included. Like, they can do the thing too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I tend towards the trying to be too inclusive sometimes, and that makes it crunchier than it needs to be.
Yeah, we had a couple parts that were pretty crunchy and we had to whittle it down, but she's trying to go a different route than I am. I'm going for straightforward, simple, and, you know, so I've told her, just give, you know, write your word salad and I will, you know, go through and pull it all together, because she writes like and comes up with these fantastic ideas, and I come up with ideas too, and we just go back and forth and wheedle it down as what will work. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we both want people to feel included and in on everything, you know, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. And I think it is a bit of a stroke of luck when you can find someone that you can work with that brings such a strong skill set that is overlaps perhaps, but is different from what you may bring. Do you find that that's part of the case?
Absolutely. With the TTRPG, but especially in the channel, our skills are totally complementary to each other for how we're doing it. Like, I know without Kat, I would not be anywhere near to where I am right now. I would have gotten overwhelmed. And I may have even just ended the channel because I would have gotten so overwhelmed.
And see, for my part, I would have thought, you know, this would be a really fun thing to do, but I don't talk to people by and large. Like, I'm not a social butterfly. Like, if I'm introduced to somebody or given like an opening, I'll talk and I will, you know, get to know people, and I can be very personable. My stepmom says I'm charming like my dad, but I don't talk to people like he used to. You know, he'll go up and talk to anybody. But she, my dear best friend here, will talk to everybody. Like, we go places in town, and I can throw a stick and hit 10 people she knows, because she just talks to everybody.
We can go camping in the middle of nowhere, and I will know the person camping next to us.
She did. This is legit a thing that happened. She looked up, she's like, oh, hey, and I'm like, oh my god. Like, I'm literally
borrow a can opener, because they brought Sloppy Joe stuff, but they didn't bring a can opener. And he comes over, and I'm like, Travis! And he's all like, what? Why are you here?
That's amazing.
And I'm literally in my camp chair. I'm like, oh my god. And I just start like looking for my beer. I was like, I can't with you. It's so in that base thing right there alone makes all the difference, because I would have never even done it. I'd have thought it was a cool idea, but I'd have never done it because I don't have the wherewithal to do with people the way she does. You know, so yeah. That in its base like really made the difference for us to even get where we are.
Oh yeah. And imagine trying to do something with someone who in your esteem is not bringing enough.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's even worse, right?
That's the flip side too, is, you know, we kind of needle each other when the other one's kind of slacking, like, hey, we need to do this thing right now. Oh, hey, did you do that thing? No, I've been slacking. Okay, I'll get on it right now. You know? So we kind of like poke at each other when the other is kind of slacking, which is helpful, but yeah, that's that whole idea of the group project where someone just comes along and wants the credit and you're just kind of dragging them as dead weight. That would not be good either. I would probably be out for that as well.
Like, yeah, makes sense. I feel like I'm not doing as much because she has the tangible side of things with graphics and, you know, stuff like that. And then I'm like, I feel like I'm not doing as much. And then she's like, bitch, you run two full on long-term campaigns, you play in three other games.
You've got to meet those.
And all the
other games and things, you know, play tests, one shots, all these other things, people to come play on them, people to DM them. Like, she lines up all this stuff. I'm like, no, because if I had to do that, it wouldn't happen. Like, I can do all the technical stuff, I can give you all the visual stuff all day long, and the business stuff. And then on the business side, even, we have complementary skills, because I can do all of the other business stuff, but I will not do accounting. I absolutely hate accounting.
And I used to be a bookkeeper. So.
Oh, yes. Oh, nice.
Funny, I actually took a friend's business that his family had basically run into the ground and had to redo 3 years worth of accounting. It took me 6 months, and they're like, oh, this is why we're so broke. I'm like, yeah, because you're frivolous, bitches.
Amazing.
Doing that for a month makes me want to die inside. So, you know, we definitely have like these really awesome complementary skill sets, you know, so the other stuff where it, you know, it gives us the space to work on the other aspects that us as people and adults who probably need therapy and are getting regular therapy are able to like at least work through things and find our way forward as, you know, business partners and best friends, you know, because I've seen many a time that this kind of thing does bomb a friendship. So yeah,
and it totally could have gone the other way. There are a lot of times in our past where we would have issues and then we would just ignore them until we forgot about them.
Yeah, or
never talk them out, and now we kind of force ourselves to.
Yeah, it's, you know, or like if we, before, she's also my roommate, so, you know, before we were living together, you know, we just like, we'd get irritated with each other over something probably completely stupid, like knowing us, you know, sometimes it's just dumb, and then we wouldn't talk for like weeks.
Sometimes, like, sometimes
now the schedule's too full to not talk for weeks.
Right.
Yeah, well, it's different now. Like, you know, it's, you know, we're so integrated into each other's lives at this point. It's a little hard to not talk at any point, at least for a few minutes in the day. You know, but
like, you know, right, now I'm sitting for my mom. I'm watching her dogs and watering her plants and stuff while she's out of town for a week and a half. And it's like we've still like checked in with each other every day, but it's that dichotomy of, oh, hey, she's not just in the next room. I can't just go hunt her down to ask her.
Yeah, it's actually a little weird, to be honest. But like yesterday, we we met for coffee. Like, we don't meet for coffee. She gets in my car and we go to coffee. But we actually met at a coffee shop and worked on the game. But it was like, I was sitting there like, I was packing up and she was leaving. I'm like, this is just weird.
It does bring to mind the tremendous overlap that role-playing, that the game industry, I hate to use that word, the game, wow, this is the word that I don't even know what to say about it. The phenomenon that incorporates so many other skill sets. It's writing and editing and imagination and art and business and all that kind of stuff. You have to have skills if you're going to do anything remotely business-like with it.
Yeah, it's there's a lot, you know, to go around, you know, all of that, especially like we actually are a legitimate business. We have an LLC and everything. So we decided very early on that if we're going to do it, we're going to do it, you know. So yeah, it is hard, you know, to find all of those skills in a small grouping, but also there is a lot of overlap, but the community itself brings in so many different types. It's actually a lot more diverse than people realize. Is at its surface, like I know when I was a kid, and a lot of people still see it this way outside of the community, that, you know, the typical TTRPGer is some dude that lives in his mom's basement and mouth breathes, you know, it's not at all. I mean, now, I will say in the 90s when I was starting to play, I met a lot of those types.
Oh, yeah.
They really? Were terrible and gross, but the community that I have come into doing this, I was not even aware of before I started. I became slightly aware of it when Kristen started doing her stuff in November, but I had no idea that this was such a huge online thing until I really started getting into it. I started meeting folks. I've met so many different people from all sorts of different backgrounds, and it's
we diverse. Play with people internationally. Even one of our cyberpunk players is in New Zealand.
Oh, right.
She's
student. That's awesome.
She's a college student. You know, we have another player. He's changing careers to go into healthcare. We've got, you know, all sorts of age ranges and experiences. And it's interesting when you sit in Discord and talk to all these different folks and you start to like get to know people. It's been quite interesting seeing the difference from when I would meet these folks at different conventions in the late 90s, the few times I went before I kind of stepped away from that a little, to now. It's so insanely different.
And we've curated a really good community in our Discord where it's a wide range of ages and experience and background. And like one of the things that Kat was like, oh, I really love this, is that it's, you know, a normal thing for everybody, or at least, you know, there's like 6 to 10 of us that'll come in and say good morning a lot. Yeah. Like Aaron will drop in a lot and come and say hello at least and just, you know, keep tabs. And
it's such a trip to me. You know, when I was, you know, a kid in the 90s again, and the internet started to be a thing before we have the internet as we know it, we had bulletin board systems where everybody would go on a text chat and just chat along off and on all day. And that's what Discord reminds me of. I have had like such mass nostalgia, especially the last like 3 or 4 weeks that I've been on Discord a lot. Just reminding me of those days, just chatting with my friends and just like having these great conversations that just go all over the place. We don't, honestly, we talk about gaming some, but it's not like entirely the bulk of what we talk about. We hit all kinds of things. So
are you referring to like listservs?
Listservs.
That's what I think of when you mention bulletin boards.
More like message boards. Bulletin board systems were actual chats. So
okay,
it's like entirely like what Discord presents itself as. So you've got everybody with their handle and just this scrolling long chat, and you can private message people. And then have different chat rooms. It's the same thing, but it was the only thing you could do because there was no graphical interfaces. The internet, actually, when I first started using the BBSs, there was no internet. You couldn't log on and go to websites. There was no such thing. So,
yeah. Imagine, you know, growing up in the 80s.
Well, I mean, I was in grade school in the 80s. We didn't have anything. My first computer was a Commodore 64.
And, we used to have pieces of paper that we folded in half. When you opened them up, there was a checkbox for yes and a checkbox for no.
Oh, I had those. I had those too.
I'm not as far behind as people think I am.
See, I'm in that weird generation where I had the checkbox, yes or no, and letters that would say, you know, will you go out with me? And the little football foldy things you kick at people. And yeah. Then computers later. You know, I'm in that weird, like, mid-range between the two. You know, I'm, like, right at the end of Gen X in terms of age. And that generation is kind of in between both sides of the technology spectrum. Like, we had a dial phone with a cord that was, like, 30 feet long that... You know, I could take just outside the sliding glass door to hide from my parents to have private phone calls, even though they're listening on the other end.
And you'd swirl the cord and it would give you that optical illusion of, like, you could, like, see through it.
And then it would be all twisted, and then you couldn't move more than 3 feet until you took the 15, 20 minutes to,
to untangle it. Yeah. Oh, my dad used to get so mad at that. You know, but so I'm kind of that middle generation there where it's, I remember all of the analog side of it and then the digital side. So, and the BBSs that I'm talking about are kind of that bridge between the two where you could chat with people in real time on the computer. And then, you know, so it's like before when you still had letters and then the internet after, that was the middle piece. So I made a lot of friends off of that too. So
there was some sort of zeitgeist that we have now, this shift in the spirit that happened around, I think a lot of credit goes to fifth edition for it, but I don't know that that's the entire reason, because this resurgence for a lot of people like myself who had played first edition or maybe second edition and then took a big break. We have this infamous big break and then came back to it at fifth edition. It was almost like a sort of a clarion call to return.
Yeah.
It's really bizarre.
No, I can see that because I like it just, and I could see that because, you know, Kristen started wanting to DM and she's like, yeah, we'll just do this on D&D Beyond. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And she showed me and I was like, it's a digital character sheet on a website. What? And that right there makes it like a hell of a lot more accessible to people, you know, because that's something that a lot of people can understand is that aspect of presentation. And I think that was when I started to see it too, when I started to see how big it suddenly was. Like, I could find merch in Hot Topic that was D&D related. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you would never see that in a million years. That was always relegated to the gaming stores that were either in a weird back corner of the mall or like in a shop, like just outside the mall kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. And there were two options, not 12.
Yeah. Yeah, the gaming stores were not as vast. We've had more gaming stores pop up in the last, like, 5 years than we've had in the city in ages. And it just, so, like, when I came into the TTRPG community online, the vastness of it was just overwhelming. It's super cool. Like, I'm super stoked about it because it's such, you know, it's awesome to see so many people in it. But I was stunned for a minute. It was insane to me.
As an educator, it occurs to me that the shift might be in part that with the expansiveness of education and with the incredible speed with which technology is moving, it is allowing human beings more and more to do things that they enjoy. And also, the millennials perhaps started this shift in industry where it was like, I'm going to do my fun kid things for a living. I don't want to do the boring stuff. I want to figure out a way to make money playing games and having fun. And then we have esports and all that kind of stuff.
Higher viable way to live helped a lot too, where people are like, oh, I can just go on the internet and talk about my passion and people will pay me for it. Yeah. We also have to give a lot of credit to, like, Critical Role. They were like, oh, hey, we're between them and Geek and Sundry. And they're like, hey, do you want to come and play your D&D game on a stream? And then it just took off and they started telling, you know, these incredible stories. And that led to Dimension 20 and, like, all these other voice actors and stuff that were playing the game. It made it more accessible to a lot of people that just didn't know what to do or how to get into it. And then they saw it actually being played. And that really made it accessible to a lot of people too.
I do think she is on the right path there for sure, because I know around when Geek and Sundry, and there's a couple other ones that for the life of me, I can't remember right now, but it probably like 7 or 8 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago. It's got to be like 10, because I almost ran face first into Felicia Day at a convention at least 10 years ago. And she was already pretty famous then. There was like a whole spate of like nerddom humor that just kind of like came out of the shadows and became like more of a mainstream known thing. Like suddenly people were making D&D jokes and making jokes about Star Wars and Star Trek and any other kind of fandom in a much more open way. And I think that maybe started to open the door to things like, hey, I'm going to go write TTRPGs for a living and have a streaming channel. You know, I think the transition started about there. So at least 10 years, this has been building, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because like Felicia Day had a YouTube channel that where they like had where they made it almost like a TV show about them playing D&D. And then, you know, she one of my favorite moments is in the TV show Eureka, where when she finally came on as a recurring cast member, her and one of the main cast members started just playing D&D to calm their nerves. And it's like, oh, so it's okay for this to be cool again now?
Yeah, and like Vin Diesel came out saying he's been an avid D&D player his whole life. And Joe Manganiello also being like an avid D&D player, you know, he's like the hot poster boy for D&D now. So, it's been little things that have been bringing it to the more public consciousness that makes it less of the, oh, you play D&D and oh, you play D&D. Can we play? You know, that
Jonathan Stanton now too, who's an NFL player, and he's all like, fuck yes, I get down with D&D.
Oh yeah. Well, he's teammates with Pro Bowl, super famous Pro Bowl defenseman. You know, I mean, you've got a lot of celebrity overlapping into this pastime because they played it as kids, and now it's okay. There are, well, like you said, there are opportunities to for other people to see you doing that still and enjoying it, and they want to enjoy it too.
I think that some of the mainstream things that popped up, starting back with Felicia Day's show with all the RPG players and all just the little stuff that's popped up over the years, I think it's taken the stigma off of being a tabletop role-playing nerd, because it did come with a stigma before that you're too nerdy. You're like, you know, you weren't, you know, socially acceptable. And I think all of these little mainstream things feeding into it has made people who may not have had the confidence to say, yeah, I play D&D, feel more comfortable and actually being open about it too. And I think that openness has led to more people seeing, hey, it's actually a pretty fun pastime and coming into the community. So I think that, you know, that fed into the next thing to the next thing to become where we are right now.
Yeah. And we're getting better entertainment as well, better movies and things like that that are,
I can't again, wait for the new movie.
I know. Well, and I was thinking about it now. There's so much more acceptance, I think, of this D&D movie and excitement around it. Because the previous Dungeons and Dragons 1 and 2 movies, which were so campy and so, you know, there was not a lot of respect given to the community via those movies. And this one, them working with wizards so closely and stuff like that to give us an authentic game material representation.
It's also opening up a new discourse around rule of cool. And, you know, you don't play it as rules of written because of all of the people like that druid can't wild shape into an owlbear, and people are like, well, actually, A, rule of cool, but B, if you go this specific circle in the druid, then when you get to this level and you do this thing, then you can wild shape into any monstrosity.
I was dying at the people coming out of the woodwork trying to rules lawyer a freaking movie trailer. It's like, oh my god, just go have a good time. That's what D&D is for, is a good time, not for this crap. So I was just over here laughing. I'm like, as soon as I watch the trailer, I'm like, I'm just waiting.
I mean, it's the same.
I also love in the resurgence of, especially with the streams and stuff like that, that people are feeling more comfortable jumping more into the role play instead of just talking in third person about what they're doing and just rolling the dice and letting those make the decisions. Like, people are role playing to the point where they don't have to make a roll because the DM's like, no, you know what? That was good. You succeed.
Yeah, and that's actually something I've been working on and learning how to do more, because I'm guilty of that. I used to just be okay, I'll just roll the dice and see how it goes, and then just say, okay, so she's going to do A, B, C, and D, and now being a player on camera and seeing all of the other people that, because I watch all the streams as we're running them too, and just seeing people actually become the characters, you know, it's, you know, made me more comfortable about it for sure, because I'm not usually a person that is in front of people a lot. So, you know, it's taken me a minute to grow accustomed to that. And I do feel like a lot of the people in this community, just seeing them and seeing everybody in our channel, has definitely given me that comfort level I didn't have before. So it does actually help.
Yeah, it brings confidence levels to other areas in your life too, where, you know, you can tap into that and be confident about something that you're like, oh yeah, okay, well, my character would do this. And you can kind of just put on that little bit of a layer of your character and bring that confidence out. And I love that too.
I don't know if people want me to bring Obscura out for anything.
But that's the place to do it. We have a few minutes left here. So you have a game that you're putting together, at least your first one, at least, let's call it that. That you're designing and putting the final touches on. You have a full schedule of offerings on Twitch, and a growing presence, more and more people in the wings, no doubt in the future, that will appear on R&R. What else does the future, what are the future goals for Rainbows and Razor Blades? What else do you have in the pipeline? If you have anything you want to share, maybe it's all secret.
Go ahead.
You know, we have like a list of some things that we would like to do. I think for me, from my perspective, and Kristen can correct me if I'm wrong on how we've been putting things together and what we see going forward. We have a list of things we want to do, but we haven't put any real time plans on anything or what's next on any firm stuff other than other games we want to do. Neither one of us expected this to blow up like it has in the last 5 months. We both saw it as more of a, you know, maybe within a year we'll hit the 100 viewers and we'll, you know, have a few games going kind of thing. And 5 months, and like you said, we have a very full schedule. So I think next we'll probably sit down and look at what we want to do next to make the space for it. At least that's how I see it. But we have a list. Pretty long. We
have different TTRPGs that we want to work on that we have really cool ideas for. Some of them are bigger, like the main one that was the first thing I'm like, this is the TTRPG I'm going to write. It's going to be a pretty massive game. And so it's going to be one of those things that I work on in baby steps.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
But with that, you know, there's some mini campaigns and some other stuff. I actually think that at some point, because she does keep on telling me, take time for you because you're gonna burn out. And I think that we'll get to the point at some point, probably in the spring, where I'm just like, all right, I need to take at least a month where I will still play in the games I play in, but I'm not running anything. And have, you know, some other people, because we have a bunch of people in the community that want to run stuff. We just don't have the time to step in and, like, do the running of the actual thing for them. And we're not at the point where we're like, all right, you can run stuff when, you know, we're too busy. We haven't quite gotten to that level of trust yet.
Sure. And most people want to run stuff in the evenings because of their schedules. So we don't have a lot of time slots either left. We filled up our Monday through Friday time slots as well. But, you know, she was right. I am on her ass a lot about making sure she doesn't burn out, because she's been, you know, I've been going on this for 5 months. She was doing it for another 3 or 4 before that, where she was working, you know, 3 months at least before it, where she was going 7 days a week on games or 5 days a week on games, somewhere in that range. You know, I'm like, dude, you need to take a break, you know. And we do, you know, we want it to be a community channel where other people are comfortable coming and being as part of the games, part of the Discord. So, you know, her taking a break and us giving room to other people to run games is great, you know. So that's
if I take like a 6-week chunk off, that's 2 nights a week where, you know, we can have 2 different people people run some mini campaigns. We have our playtest that we want to run. We've got another friend that's doing the challenge that he's like, yeah, I'd love to have you run our or run mine.
We have another
person who's been working on a TTRPG project for years. I would love to play Nuovarden on the channel.
Yes, we have
all my people contact your people.
So we have like three play tests. I want to run Blade Runner. She has another one that she wants to run.
I have so many I want to run, but I just
We have one that you just specifically posed like 2 days ago. You know, so we have other games we want to run. And then we have other games we want to write, because our Pocket Quest actually ties into a much larger plan that we have for a whole ecosystem in of itself. And then she has a separate one that she wants to do. So,
and then there's another one that we've talked about doing with another of our friends.
Oh, yes, we have. So we have a lot of things floating in the ether right now. We just need to nail them down as to what we want to do next and when is kind of where we're at right now, because everything came together and just grew exponentially in a short time. Now we're at that point where we need to take a breath and look at things from the standpoint of, okay, we've come this far. Where do we want to go in the next steps? Like, we have season breaks coming up in October for three of the shows. So, you know, that'll be a good time to look at it. And we have, you know, conversations all the time. You know, I'll walk in a room like, hey, here's some ideas for the channel, and just drop them all right there. So
whiteboard.
Yeah, we have ongoing conversations, but we do need to take a minute, really, like, pick what things are definitely next for sure. Everything has just been so whirlwind right now. We need to kind of get our wits about us for the next phase.
I totally went, all right, we need content. I'm going to start running two separate long-term campaigns within 2 weeks of each other. And then before I even got to premiere either of those, we had our friend Chad be like, so I have this game I want to run on Thursday nights. Can I run it on your channel? And we're like, yes, sure. We've got another DM. Woohoo. And then through the Saturday night game I'm a player in on a different channel, one of them over there is all like, so I know that you're setting it up as a community game, and my home DM would love, my home game DM would love to try streaming, and she's an artist, and so she's, you know, willing to do some art for stuff too, and would it be okay for her to come in? And then she's like, yeah, I want to run a long-term campaign, and we can do it on Tuesdays. And we're like, why did this fall together so well?
Yeah, it was funny. Like, yeah, the Watercolor Wizardry, the show that Maria paints for us on, that came together, and Kristen told me about it, and then 2 days later, she's like, yeah, we're going to start on Tuesday, which was 2 days after that. And I was like, oh, that came rather fast. You know, it just, amazing. And then she actually didn't start her long-term game until last week with the first of two one-shots. But, you know, so we had more time to prepare for that. But the other three games had been up and running for almost, what, 5 weeks when she did her game. So six, actually. So,
wow.
Yeah, you know, we're on mid-season break right now for three of them.
And thank goodness, sounds like.
We got to 6 weeks in our mid-season break already for three long-term games, and of itself is kind of nuts. So,
wow. Well, it sounds like it's growing just beautifully. Where can people find you?
Would you like to start, Kristen?
We've got sure. For our channel itself, on both Twitch and Twitter, we are R&R Production. Yeah, there's no S on that one. Production. On YouTube, they can find us by searching Rainbows and Razor Blades Production.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to the point where we can have a fancy short name yet. We're getting there.
Yeah. And Instagram is Rainbows N Razor Blades, because, you know, social media is the thing where people have already taken a name that you were, like, establishing yourself with.
Honestly, if you go to our Twitter, we have a link tree, and you can find all of our socials and our Discord, which is a public channel, and our YouTube and everything right there. And our merch store, too. We actually have merch as well.
Yes, we do. We've got a couple different things, and it's awesome.
Perfect.
And then myself personally, I can be found all over the internet on various platforms as Darth Surrealish.
As for me, I am primarily on Twitter for my business and streaming life. You can find me as Autumn Knox on there. You can find me attached to Rainbows and Razor Blades as well, because I'm all over that. That's really the only place you can currently find me. I don't really do much outside of the channel yet. And I have my own business as well, but I haven't really grown that either. So that's pretty much it. That's where you'll find me, is on Rainbows and Razor Blades.
Excellent. Aaron, did you have any final thoughts as we close up?
I did not. Just okay. Enjoyable conversation.
Very much. Well, congratulations on your growth and success. I'll speak for myself, and I won't speak for Aaron, but I imagine she agrees. There, I just spoke for you. have enjoyed getting to know you. Kristen, we got to play together. Well, we played New of Arden together, and that's where I met you.
Yeah.
And it's been fun to watch the progress of this. It seemed like R&R was suddenly being announced, and it was there, and it has just gone great. So congratulations again. And thanks for coming on today and talking to us.
Yeah, thank you both very much.
Thanks for having us. This was a great time. I enjoyed it. You have to come on our show next.
All right.
That's a deal.
All right. Well, thanks again, and we'll be talking to you later.